This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Support WrestleTalk!
Give us a subscribe.
Hey everybody, I'm John Cena.
Hey, it's professional wrestler Colt Boom Boom Cabana.
Hey, I'm Double J, Jeff here.
This is Rich Swann.
Matt Riddle, the King of Rose.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Do it, bro.
Support Ollie. Support Luke. Support WrestleTalk.
Support WrestleTalk. Home of Luke Owen. Whatever WrestleTalk is and whoever Luke Owen is.
Hello and welcome to the WrestleTalk podcast, NXT flavored edition. I am El Fakeador Laurie Blake, and I'm joined by Adam Blumpier. And today we are going to be talking about Chris Jericho saying that it's embarrassing at this point for NXT to still be competing against AEW. We'll also be reviewing the rest of the show. Here is the episode. We're going to be reviewing NXT in just a bit, but I thought it'd be interesting to talk about this interview that Chris Jericho did with Inside the Ropes and Alex McCarthy, where they chatted a bit about AEW and stuff. And Jericho actually posed a question to Alex saying, why is NXT on a Wednesday night? And Alex said that that it was obviously to oppose Dynamite. Jericho followed up saying, exactly, they came on Wednesday just to mess with us and they should take the head out of their ass and go make money. Don't worry about our company. We're not worried about you. We don't have a screen up that shows what's going on every moment on NXT like they do watching Dynamite. Leave us alone. Go do your own thing. Go to Tuesdays. Grab an extra 250,000 viewers. Finally get your demo where it needs to be, because it's pretty embarrassing on a Wednesday night to go up against us. The demo god thing is not a gimmick. It's real. So go to Tuesday, go to Sunday, go to any day you want, but don't exist just to mess with us because we're beating you every week. It's kind of embarrassing for NXT at this point. He doesn't mince his words, Christopher Jericho, does he? Yeah. And I think, to be fair, he's got a point in, you know, like if NXT has been moved to TV to compete with AEW Dynamite, they have been failing ultimately to beat them week in and week out for a good few months now. They've had a few weeks over the course of their history where they have bested AEW in terms of overall viewership, but never in the right demographics. They have had to pull some pretty big strings to achieve that. I think, you know, they've had to have main roster talent appear on NXT to kind of get that bump. They've had to build it around takeover quality matches on NXT TV, and you know they should be doing that anyway because that's what makes a good TV show. But it was interesting when NXT moved to Tuesdays last week and seeing that bump in viewership, because there are that, you know, NXT isn't a product that people don't want to watch. I think NXT is a product that people don't have time to watch when AEW is also on at the same time, when there is so much wrestling in a week already to kind of view. Like, you know, just to keep up with WWE in a week, you have to watch 7 hours of TV. That's a lot of TV to get through in a week. Like, you know, even if you're the sort of person who binges a load of, like, you binged all the Boys on a Saturday or whatever it was, like, that's, it's still a lot of TV to watch every week, especially at fixed times. So, you know, moving to NXT to Tuesday just gives everyone breathing room. And we've said before on WrestleTalk that, you know, it would make our lives a lot easier because we can't do this live because AEW is live. And it just doesn't work out really in terms of, like, even just the way that YouTube works, like peeling back the curtain. There's an algorithm there that, like, will stop it suggesting videos to you if we put out too many in the space of 24 hours. So we have to stagger our videos to fit them all in, to make sure that people actually get notified, to make sure that people actually watch the videos, because otherwise, what's the point in making videos? Do you think, Adam,
you're right,
that they... Sorry, I do actually think it makes sense. And I do, you know, it is almost kind of stubbornness on the part of NXT to continue a war that they're losing in this sense. Like, you know, if it is a war... I do think that, yeah, I know it's not a war. It's the equivalent of someone with their hand on your head holding you back and you're swinging your arms and you can't hit him. And, like, that's not to say that NXT is a bad product and not to say that AEW is any better a product. It's just to say that that is just where people's viewing habits go. AEW is the fresh new kid on the block offering you, like, some of the biggest names on the independent scene in wrestling doing their thing every week. And it's not under the WWE banner. WWE's main programming hasn't really generated... Like, it doesn't earn the loyalty that it gets, I don't think, necessarily, Raws and SmackDowns, do they? Like, people are still very loyal to watching WWE, but I think a lot of people feel let down on a weekly basis. So they won't really go, well, I'm going to watch the third level of that company's product. I'm already watching Raw and SmackDown, and I think they're absolutely bobbins. So why would I then go and subject myself to some guys who are, you know, as far as we know, still in the developmental brand and therefore still learning the wrestling? So,
yes. Gargano and Ciampa.
I know,
are doing their best to pick up.
I know, but it's still the sort of semantic look of it, isn't it? I think it still looks that way outside.
And it's when you compare that to the fact that Dynamite is AEW's flagship show, it's just like, well, it doesn't really compare. It would be a lot more convenient for us if they moved, and therefore they should. Mm-hmm. My initial reaction to it was I find the whole narrative tiresome anyway. WWE versus AEW, just whichever side is speaking, I don't care. But I will say, I was originally going to say that I thought NXT should stay because competition, I think, breeds innovation. Yes, NXT are losing, but, you know, WWE was losing to WCW once upon a time. They had to step their pussy up, as RuPaul would say. And my initial thought was just do that. But then again, they programmed really hard on Super Tuesday. So I don't know. I just want to see NXT, and this will dovetail into what we thought of this week's episode. I want to see NXT putting on significant programming. I feel like NXT might be more likely to put on significant programming when they're up against AEW and Dynamite. Mm-hmm. But they were up against AEW and Dynamite this week, and they didn't put on significant programming. This week's episode was fine, but it was very much an episode about, hey, guess what's going to be great? Next week's episode of NXT.
AEW might be doing something.
I do find generally the conversation a bit kind of like, but... For us, and I think for generally wrestling fans, it's like, it's not that big a war. It's not the Monday Night Wars. Not worth inconveniencing the viewing habits of people who just want to see good wrestling. Because to be honest, the best two wrestling shows being released on a weekly basis are NXT and Dynamite. And it would be super nice if we didn't have to choose or, you know, have to watch one of them on catch up. Both of them, both shows knock Raw and SmackDown to a cocked hat. So essentially, like, yeah, it would be nice if we were able to cover the quality wrestling in the most financially lucrative way for the company, i.e. us, i.e. on a, you know, platform with Super Chat.
Well, this is the thing, isn't it? It's like, you know, the Monday Night War made so much more sense when people didn't have catch-up readily available, when they didn't, you know, when people maybe didn't have a VCR with a record function in order to record one channel while watching another, or any of that stuff that, you know, that these are all mod cons that we live with now. It is now just a bit of a pain to be like, well, I'll sit down and miss the conversation that's happening live on Twitter about NXT because I want to watch AEW and talk about that instead. So yeah, you're just asking people to choose for no real reason. And it is all it is just a bit of a pain. And you're not really winning anything because, yeah, like NXT probably is getting viewing figures. Maybe it's getting viewing figures online similar to like it's Super Tuesday showing. You know, maybe that's the quantity of people who might watch NXT on catch up and stuff. But those aren't counted in the kind of overnights that are lauded on Twitter and by wrestling pundits and by, you know, the companies themselves. These aren't taken into account. So you're just losing a sort of PR battle for no reason.
Yeah.
So you might. And I know that WWE is not the sort of company to back down. You know, one thing WWE has never really done, back down from a fight. But maybe this is the time to just concede and just go, like, look, we could just go to Tuesday and have a much bigger, you know, have a much bigger audience. And then you build bigger stars to bring to Raw and SmackDown in the future. Like, look how, you know, Keith Lee is a very good example of someone who obviously, like, was at the forefront of NXT as it went live on TV and was in some of the bigger, the higher viewed episodes having these sort of marquee matches as well. So like he had that, there's this big benefit of that kind of audience growing around him through that. He's also obviously incredibly clippable and gif-able, and that has been done to death on Twitter as well. But then they boosted all of that with Survivor Series and the Royal Rumble and all these other little appearances of Keith Lee. So like they managed to build a star there and bring him up to the main roster. And there was some bluster about him, but you could do that with everyone. If everyone has seen those people on NXT on a night that's convenient and they're not instead thinking, oh, Kenny Omega was brilliant last night. Wasn't Pentagon Jr. great? Like, because AEW Dynamite, like you said, that's their flagship show. And it does just make those guys seem that little bit more important to the overall narrative of the company. Instead of NXT, everyone's watching it just going, I hope they don't go to the main roster and get ruined. Ooh, my little, and it always feels like a little side project, NXT. There's that little sort of feeling of like, this is my little secret thing that I'm watching that everyone else is about Raw and SmackDown, but here I am watching NXT, seeing all the good wrestling, and I'm sort of on the inside track of what's actually hot in the world of wrestling. So maybe a little bit of that magic would be lost if it did move to Tuesday, but I do think they'd get more viewers and probably in the right demographics. And like Chris Jericho said, it's not, you know, the demo god thing. Yeah, it is a gimmick, obviously, but it's also a gimmick based on truth, as all the sort of best gimmicks are to some degree. They have that sort of wrinkle of actuality to them. And I think, yeah, being able to say like, when I'm on the show, we do better in the demos. I mean, they do better in the demo anyway, but it just does feel like NXT probably should just bow out here. Like AEW's got Wednesdays wrapped up and both companies maybe. I also think maybe AEW should just think about moving as well. Because they
change places.
Yeah, but both companies are, you know, kind of cutting off their nose to spite their face here. There is a bigger viewership for both of them if they weren't competing over the same one. And ultimately, like, what they're thinking about is a war between themselves of, like, backwards and forwards of who's going to have the most viewers of wrestling fans tonight. And it's like, what you should be thinking about is where you come in the rankings of TV shows overall, because there's plenty of other stuff on TV that's beating you. And you might sneak a few places up the overall watch list on TV if you just had the full audience of wrestling fans who are going to watch you that night. Like, that's not an issue that Raw necessarily has. I know Raw's viewership was pretty bad this week. But, like, you know, previously Raw has been very consistently high in terms of, like, the overall programming on US TV. And I just think, like, NXT and AEW could be in that upper echelon if they weren't just fighting over this floating 250,000 people that there are. I just think it's mad.
I don't. It's so silly. Like I don't care about ratings. You know, I'm sure the companies do. I'm sure this whoever wins this kind of floating voter, 250,000 people. You know, I'm sure that matters to someone. All that matters to me is the quality of NXT programming. And I just think, yeah, how you feel on this issue, just like, how does NXT programming compare now, you know, now that it's gone up against AEW? For me, when NXT first started on TV, I thought it was brilliant. Like, it was really exciting stuff. But it has got a little bit kind of, not desperate, that's the wrong word, but it's like, it's very transparent what they're trying to do, you know, with the Great American Bash popping up for no reason. You know, with like doing these insanely kind of big grabs, you know, like we're doing a double championship match, you know, to try and program against Fyter Fest. And it's like, does it make the content better? Sometimes it does. Sometimes it doesn't, because sometimes they have to rush storylines in order to get to you know, build these huge things, you know, like having to, I only care in so much as I want to watch good TV. NXT was always doing fine booking wise when it didn't have to grab ratings. Like the golden era of NXT on TV is when it was buried on the internet somewhere. You know, like that is when it booked its best. And maybe if it did just bow out and not worry about having to get, you know, to pop that rating every single time to, you know, like there's going to be a lot of people, you know, that subscribe to that Vince Russo being like, there should always be something amazing happening. There should always be something major. You know, so I think both sides are right. It's just like, for me, I think if it just ends the conversation, makes our job takes a bit of the pressure off NXT from constantly having to do kind of quite as nakedly transparent counter programming, because you really do get a bit of a whiff of main roster on that. For me, like it's much of a muchness, and you can agree either way. But for me, yes, I think they should move to Tuesday.
I just think, yeah, it's funny that the move to Tuesday would be interesting, because even just from a sort of performance perspective, they could likely coast a little bit more on a Tuesday and be doing better in the ratings. Like, you know, they wouldn't have to be out there doing such intense stuff. I would obviously still love them to be performing at the level they're performing every week and doing these large scale things. But yeah, I think when NXT was hidden on the internet, like you said, it was 1 hour of perfectly plotted, perfectly paced television. And sure, there were little filler matches here and there, and there was just getting somebody over, and there was a bunch of squash time for someone in a sort of 3 week build up to starting their feud. That's all fine. The benefit I saw in going to 2 hours on TV was that, yeah, you could get a longer pay-per-view level match on TV. And they definitely did that for the first little bit. And now they've kind of settled, and it's been a weird year. We can all admit it's been a very weird year. So like, I'm not blaming NXT at all for having certain matches which are just fine, perfectly good matches with not really much build going into them. But yeah, it does feel like a little bit this year has been coasting, and then these huge spikes of like, we need to do something in like 2 weeks time, and they didn't really plan for that, so we're just zooming into that. And then like even the way that takeovers have been built, obviously Takeover 30 I think was very well built, but Takeover in Your House felt very rushed. This next Takeover feels pretty rushed, frankly. Like, you know, because we had the Great American Bash, we had Super Tuesday, and we've just literally come out of Super Tuesday, and now we're just doing like, and now the next Takeover is, it's in 2 weeks or 3 weeks or something like that. It's very soon. And like, so we're just going to have a bunch of multi-person matches to decide number one contenders. That's not a way to really make me massively invested in this feud that we're going to go into. Like, you know, Finn Balor's just going to go up against one dude who wins this match. Sure, like that's definitely worked in the past. Like Kofi won a gauntlet match, didn't he? Kofi won a gauntlet match to get into the match with Daniel Bryan, but they built that over time. Once he won the gauntlet match, there was a lot of story to be done. So I just think it's a shame that NXT this year has felt like it's just sort of a lot of sort of coasting, and then these huge spikes of like activity where they've had to build something really quickly. And maybe that's just part and parcel of a year in which you don't know what's coming next and what you'll be allowed to do week to week, so they're just having to do it as they go. But you did that on a Tuesday, all that stuff's getting more views, and people probably be less, but like, you know, overall you maybe wouldn't have to be doing such big disruptive events like the Great American Bash or Super Tuesday, which, you know, obviously it was great that Super Tuesday kind of was happening because they needed to crown a new champion at short notice. That's fair enough. But Super Tuesday also has disrupted the build to the next takeover, really, when you think about it. So, yeah, I guess, like, if you didn't have to do these bits of... again, I'm saying that, but Super Tuesday was on a Tuesday. But, like, yeah, if you weren't counter-programming to AEW... Well,
you know, they just did that because of, you know, they had to because of Karrion Kross. But, it, like, I think we've spent a lot of time talking about this because there is a huge amount of, like, stuff to talk about on this week's NXT. And I think that's kind of the interesting thing, really, because this week's NXT is a good wrestling show.
Oh, yeah.
Good wrestling show. Good matches happen. Shotzi match is good. The main event is good. The tag match is really good. Mm. Like, that's the thing, is like, it's not a lot of storyline development, but it's a lot of good wrestling. And I just think, like, it's a lot less pressure when that doesn't go up against AEW's flagship show. Because, like, if you're forced to choose, right, and you turn into NXT and you see an episode like this, and then you hear about, you know, all this amazing street fight and blah 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 that's happening in AEW, you might just be just like, oh well, not much has happened this week's NXT. I'll tune into AEW next week, and maybe you won't come back. Whereas if you tune into NXT, you know, if you tuned in to watch this episode of NXT on a Tuesday, be just like, that was a good solid hour of wrestling. That I'll be back next week.
I don't feel like I've wasted my time or missed out on something else. And I think that's the thing, is like, you know, I think the key to it is that ultimately everyone who watches wrestling is a wrestling fan. And whether that's, you know, you're loyal to AEW or WWE, I think people were just a bit tribal about it. And there's no point. You're just cheating yourself by not watching the other one, frankly. But yeah, ultimately, I just think it's a situation in which people do just feel like they're missing out. And like you said, that they will transfer across to the other one if they feel like one isn't living up to their expectations. Because this is a war for I've made the right choices on my viewing habits on a Wednesday night. And that's ultimately, it's the same as, you know, people fighting over whether they're going to buy the new PlayStation or the new Xbox. People just want to make the right choices about things where you can't really go back and make a different choice. So yeah, it would be fine if it was a Tuesday and you were just like, that's great wrestling. I've enjoyed my 2 hours. See you next Tuesday. And then AEW can happen on a Thursday still.
I'll give you my final thought on it, which is NXT is pretty much always good. It's pretty much always good. Like, I haven't really sat down and watched an episode of NXT and just gone, that wasted my time. Mm. And sometimes, quality-wise, NXT beats AEW. Sometimes. It does, sometimes. It's just that I think where Chris Jericho is right in one key respect is that NXT is never, unless they try and do it artificially, NXT is never going to feel like a more important watch than AEW. AEW, Dynamite is the only show that AEW puts out weekly. It's the only time where you get to see all of the AEW stars. NXT will never feel as important as that. And when they try to make NXT feel as required viewing as that, it occasionally comes back to bite them or makes it feel like, oh, this is just a bit desperate, or oh, that's a bit like, stop counter-programming or blah, blah, blah. You know, like, NXT's great. And I feel like, yeah, let's just put it on a separate day so that both shows can just be great. We can stop using the words Wednesday Night War. I'm tired of it.
Yeah. Well, NXT's in that funny position where they're they're part of the much bigger company and yet somehow still the underdog in this scenario. So they've got that weird, there's a really weird dynamic where it feels like they're both punching down and then trying to attack the bigger guy to get a bit of, like PR or rep at the same time. It's a really strange dynamic. And I don't think either of those two ways of thinking about it really makes NXT look good in this. Like, AEW just seems like they were just trying, like, they've always seemed, I know they've attacked WWE a little bit in sort of metaphorical circumstances. Cody definitely smashed a throne at one point with a sledgehammer. But AEW just seems like something that has started and is trying to make a name for itself. And NXT has that cynical air behind it of WWE doing a bit of corporate maneuvering, and maybe just moving it to Tuesday night absolves you of that issue. It's not a defeat. It's just giving the really good wrestlers who perform on NXT the viewership that they probably deserve, because they are busting their asses every week doing amazing matches. And yeah, whether or not there is the storyline always to back it up is another thing. but they probably have a little bit more room to tell the storylines without having to constantly be like, here's Charlotte Flair for 4 weeks. Here's Becky Lynch. Here's someone else. Like, we're just going to add stuff in now to make you watch. I just think, yeah, I think NXT would have a much better time on a Tuesday.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Do you like wrestling? Do you like improv? Do you like role-playing games? And you'll love No Roles Barred, presented by the WrestleTalk Podcast Network. Six players come together to create a fictional wrestling promotion, roll dice, and create the kind of insanity that real companies can only dream of creating. Can Tony the Milkman survive the twilight of his career and still find time to care for his wrestling son? Can the Denimatrix overcome the vicious Apex and achieve total denimation? Can brothers Golden Joe and Silver Bro coexist as a tag team before they combust? Find out now with the wrestling show that everyone's talking about. No Roles Barred is available wherever you get your podcasts and only presented on the WrestleTalk Podcast Network.
We've got a little announcement before we get on with the rest of the review, don't we, Adam?
Oh, yes.
Would you like to do it?
Yes, all right. So in terms of in terms of counter-programming,
we're counter-programming ourselves, I think, because how are we going to appear on everything that we've got to do now?
Laurie, do you like board games?
I do like board games.
I also like board games. Laurie, would you like to do a YouTube channel about getting people into board gaming?
Yeah, I guess so, yeah. I've got time, I think.
We don't. We don't have the time to make this new channel, but it's essentially the reason I'm back on YouTube. That was the first conversation I really had when talking to WrestleTalk about becoming part of the team, is this new project, which is Phenomenerds. It's our brand new YouTube channel all about board games. I didn't load a graphic before I entered this chat. Give me 2 seconds and I'll get a graphic.
It's a board games YouTube channel. Imagine what that looks like for a second, because you're going to see a graphic soon that might explain it better.
Look, isn't that nice? There it is. Phenomenerds is a brand new board game channel launching in October. We're going to have all sorts of stuff. Basically, it's not a channel for board gamers, although people who are fans of board games will get a lot out of it. It's actually a gateway channel to get you into board gaming, because board games are a bit like wrestling. There's a lot of content out there, and it's a little bewildering to know where to start when you first arrive. So we're putting together a whole, like a whole channel built around explaining the different types of board games out there, giving you like ideas on how to start your collection, like top 10 lists on what are the best examples of every single board game out there, doing deep dives into classic board games, like does Monopoly hold up? Which, you know, it means we're going to be playing Monopoly for the first time in like 20 years.
I don't want to.
You have to, Laurie. You have to.
I'll enjoy it because it's for work.
we're doing like fascinating like bits of history about board games, like how Monopoly boards were used to help prisoners of war escape prisoner camps in World War II. This is an actual thing that happened. So yeah, we're super excited about making this channel. Me, Luke, Laurie, and other faces will be appearing on it over the coming months. It launches first official week of October, so October 5th is when it starts. We're going to put a link to the channel in the description. Please do follow it and subscribe, because I genuinely can't wait. Like this, the last few weeks of making, putting all this content together, I've had a spring in my step that I can't quite compare to.
A pep in your pep, and you don't know why.
No, that's the thing. It's like, yeah, NXT's great. Wrestling is fine, mostly. Sort of. But board games are brilliant no matter the year. So yeah, this is like the thing I want to be most kind of proud of being a part of this channel. So if you're like me, then do me a favor at least and subscribe, because we're going to try and make it the best bloody board gaming channel on YouTube and get everyone into board gaming, which is the best hobby in the world.
Get on board.
Hey, that's the tagline.
Right, enough of that nerd shit. Let's talk about NXT. Right, okay. So this week's NXT kicked off with Shotzi Blackheart versus Io Shirai. This all spilled out of the Robert Stone fiasco of last week. The great Robert Stone fiasco.
Bobby Stone losing another member of the brand through no fault of his own. What happened to Chelsea Green?
She's gone. She just quit. Have you got anything else lined up, Chelsea? No, I just don't like working with you.
Never quit your job until you got another one lined up, Chelsea.
So yeah, I thought this match was bloody brilliant. I really enjoyed Wade Barrett, who is now an official full-time member of the NXT commentary team, just signed a new deal with WWE. He'll be alongside Beth Phoenix and Vic Joseph for now. He's great. And they started the match saying that Shotzi is too far along the weirdo scale for me. I've avoided talking to her backstage. I've introduced myself to everyone else at NXT, but she's too far along the weirdos scale, which I thought was just great.
He's such a dad. It's just like, oh, bloody hell. What
greener, that? Greener.
Greener. Not in my Greggs. No, sir. I've spoken about, like, I've watched some Shotzi matches in the past. Like, I think there's one she had with Indy Hartwell that was like proper clumsy and stuff. The story of this match, obviously, like the commentators just kept talking about it, was look how surprisingly well Shotzi Blackheart's doing. And yeah, she, like, that did not feel like a contrived story. She properly held her end up here. It wasn't like as crisp a match as we've seen some people have against Io Shirai, but like, damn, it was really, really good. Really pleased for her.
Yeah, Shotzi really felt like she was taking Io to the limit here, and they told that story really well. Like, I think we all kind of assumed that Shotzi wouldn't be walking out with a victory over Io Shirai here unless something drastically sort of unexpected happened. But I do think Shotzi, like, Io gave Shotzi enough offense in here to really put over Shotzi as a competitor, and Shotzi just took some brutal moves to build to the finish where you were just like, yeah, of course she's done. She just took a German suplex onto the apron. So yeah, like, which was, I think it was the most remarkable spot in here, because there's a bunch of stuff where they dodged a few moves, and there was a really brilliant bit where Io misses a tiger feint kick, and Shotzi nails her as she comes back into the ring and then hits her own reverse cannonball. And then she hits this sort of like hooks both the arms and hits her, goes to hit a German, gets a really close two, and then transitions straight out of that into cattle mutilation.
Cattle mutilation.
Yeah.
I wrote that in all caps. It's like Daniel Bryan must be so happy somewhere.
And it's, do you know what? It's a brilliant move. It looked really, made it feel really close, because the commentary really put over the idea. It's like, how do you get out of this? How do you get out? You're face down with your arms tied behind your back, essentially. What do you do to reverse this move? And Io managed to sort of roll her way out of it eventually. And then she just got a Shotzi sort of knocked her down, and she was getting up to do the senton, and Io pops up and hits the big shote. The superplex was kind of blocked, and they ended up dropping onto the apron and having a bit of a fight there. And that's when this big German suplex happened on the apron. And then, just to add insult to injury, Io picks up Shotzi, chucks her back in the ring, hits the double knees at, I'm going to say 200% pace, and then just hits the moonsault. And there was a little...
With her feet right on her bloody ribs as well.
Oh, yeah. She just shinned her in the ribs, which that's a new one for me. But there was definitely this moment where, like, Shotzi rolls out from taking the knees and she rolls into sort of position for the moonsault. And I was like, she's rolled too far. And Io looked at her and was like, you've rolled too far. And then Shotzi on the floor was like, I've rolled too far. And he was like, I'm doing it anyway. And then these knees hit. And then it's all over.
You make your bed, Shotzi.
Oh, man. I loved it. I thought this match was so good.
Like 20 minutes as well. Like,
yeah.
The episode we got.
Do you know what? And I think it's a really good choice, because I think Shotzi has been such a character on NXT for the last few months, especially in sort of the weird bit of 2020. Like, she's really sort of, you know, she is a one-woman audience as well, which is brilliant. Like, and she managed, I think she brings atmosphere to TV that doesn't necessarily, like, is a little bit dead without a crowd.
Yeah,
but she, I think, and
welcome
she has...
Welcome to the ball pit.
The ball pit, which I don't understand.
Welcome to the ball pit.
I enjoy it. I like it, though.
It's a play area?
It's a soft play area.
I'm hidden in the ball pit?
Mm. It's a welcome to the kids' party.
Welcome to the aqua splash.
Yeah, also, it's also a ball pit's not where you want to be in the middle of a pandemic, is it? Like, they are unsanitary environments. But yeah, I think she stepped up her game here. Like, you know, we've said before that, yeah, some of her matches have been a little clunky, and she's got that air sometimes of I'm waiting for the next spot. But I do think this was pretty fluid from Shotzi, and I think obviously working with someone of the caliber of Io Shirai really, really helped her. But yeah, if you're going to elevate someone, this is the way to do it, because, like, obviously NXT, as we've discovered, seems to have a bit of a vacuum of the sort of a revolving door of women in the women's division as the main roster just reaches through and goes, oh, is that your new Mercedes Martinez? Can I have a go? Bye. She's
Stop
gone.
It. Stop taking them.
But yeah.
It's amazing how NXT just continues to have such an amazing, like, because NXT, this is NXT stock and trade. Yeah, it's not always a match that has amazing storyline implications. It's just a bloody long match where both competitors end up looking stronger no matter who wins and who loses, and it's what NXT's always been good at. And yes, I please don't take Shotzi as well. Let's have a division for a bit.
Yeah, I mean, Shotzi is the exact sort of project you want for NXT. Like, when Shotzi first debuted in NXT, I was like, that's a future NXT Women's Champion. But I think she's got a long road to get there. And I think that long road is going to make the moment where she wins the belt so much more special. Because
you have to Bayley her.
She was such a fan favorite when she came in that first time as well. Like, and I do just think she immediately built a following for herself, and I could really see a slow burn with her building her up to an NXT championship shot. And I think it's quite smart, to be fair, that this wasn't just a title opportunity. This was just a shot at the champ for props rather than even for, like, the championship. So I hope they play the long game with Shotzi, and I do hope to see her holding the NXT Women's Championship one day and not just in a black hoodie on Raw as a member of Retribution in 2 months' time or whatever it is.
Strap it to a tank. Just strap the title to a tank.
I want to see her fire the title out of the tank. Shotzi's entrance should be that she comes down on the tank and parks it, and then she gets in the ring, and then the tank fires the belt around her waist.
Welcome to the jungle gym.
So we then got a little package about Tommaso Ciampa beating up Jake Atlas, and this led into a match against Desmond Troy, which Ciampa basically won. One of my notes just says he looks like Eric Young now in his entrance, with the mask and the sort of the hood
braids.
Up. And,
he's got braids yeah. in his beard now.
That's how you know someone's really lost it.
Yeah, it's a Sheamus syndrome. Yeah, he's just like, oh no. Now they're off the deep end.
If you think this looks good, you must be mad. Or a Viking, I guess, is the other thing. Well, the Viking Raiders do that a lot. This was just smashed him to pieces, really. Like, Troy went for a wrestling lockup at the beginning, and then they were told to break. Ciampa didn't let the break happen cleanly because he just snuck a knee in, hit a sleeper, ran out of the corner off an Irish whip and nailed him with two fists and stomped him in the corner. Then did the sort of... the flip thing, the catapult into the bottom of the turnbuckle that he did to Jake Atlas under the ring.
I think it's called.
Yeah, the slingshot. And then hit a Willow's Bell, and that was it. And then he goes to get a chair after the match, and you imagine this is going to be another Ciampa-level beatdown. But who should come out on the mic? It's Jake Atlas, completely fine after 2 weeks, who says, I could run down and attack you from behind, but I'm not going to do that because I'm not a coward. I want a match next week, and then we're going to get some comeuppance. I was just like, this will be fine. It's going to be Jake Atlas. It's going to be fine, mate. Don't worry
about it, Jake. Yeah.
Great idea, Jake. You did so well in the first match. I mean, you did actually do quite well in that first match, but I wouldn't be asking to go back in the tank with a shark, would you? Like, a burk. Someone who keeps climbing into tanks with sharks was Drake Maverick, who was up next. He was being asked about Killian Dane, who he's meant to be tagging with this evening against Undisputed Era. He says they're going to work it as a team. He's completely convinced about it, although they haven't spoken. He doesn't have Killian Dane's number, and Killian Dane has hit him in the face multiple times in the past few weeks. It'll be fine, Drake Maverick, ever the optimist, says.
Do you have his phone number?
blissful idiot Drake Maverick says, it'll be fine. I'm sure I can win his friendship by letting him beat me up.
Yeah, it's cute. I like this. I like this friendship. It's cute.
Yeah, I think it's going to turn out really well. Drake Maverick was lost in that keeps running into Legado del Fantasma bit for a while. At least this is a good out for his stupidity, I guess, is that he does actually eventually break down the defenses of the class bully. Because
it's a sort of like if this was happening in front of fans, they'd be eating this up. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just a sort of like, you know, it's the hug it out kind of, you know, tongue in cheek, like kind of like, love each other, come on, we know you work together and are friends probably in real life, but oh, there's the frick, love each, it's the sort of thing the fans really, really like. And yeah, even without the fans, it's cute. I'm happy that they've got a road ahead for two underused, great, great guys.
And for a division that I think needs a little boost as well, Drake Maverick and Killian Dane could make a brilliant tag team in the tag division here. But more on that in a bit, because that came up later in the show. We then got Finn Balor doing a little promo package saying that, Adam, you're undisputed, but there's only one Prince. Back when I was champion 4 years ago, I had to build the brand, carry the brand, be the brand. And he's like,
I'm the brand. You're the brand. What's a brand? He's the brand.
Russell Brand. What? And Finn said here that he doesn't really need to rep the brand anymore. He built the brand. You know, he spent time before fighting to be the champion, and now it's time for other people to fight to face the Prince. But you better look both ways before you cross the Prince. I imagine next week we're going to get like a little advert with a couple of hedgehogs not looking both ways before they cross the Prince, and he's going to run them over.
Probably.
We need a Finn cross code is what we need.
Oh, very good. Was that in your notes, was it?
No, I just made that up just then, actually.
Really?
I'll actually share my notes with you if you want to double check my workings.
Just copy, delete, cut, yeah. There, share the notes.
Perfect. I haven't been working on that all morning.
Just a huge blackboard covered.
I've done a beautiful minded the whole thing. My windows are covered in Finn puns.
Dumb that. Like it though.
Austin Theory came out next, and he appeared in the ring all day. And he said he's a future first ballot Hall of Famer. He showed that in his losing effort against Bronson Reed. But he basically just offers out an open challenge. Says, if anyone wants to come in here and face me, and you can say that you were in the ring with Austin Theory. And Kushida walks down, no music, and just nails him in the head with an enziguri is the first thing that happens.
All business.
That was, this Kushida is my favorite Kushida. This is so good. Like, I absolutely adore what they're doing with Kushida right now. Because, yeah, he just... Theory gets like a tiny bit of momentum back and misses a standing moonsault. And by the time that he's landed from the moonsault, Kushida has already kicked him in the head. I just think, like, he is incredibly quick, Kushida, and showed it off perfectly here. Like, all of his flashy stuff still feels like it works for this sort of brutal version of his character. And they sort of brawled to the outside, and the finish came as Theory forearmed the post. And they end up back in the ring as Kushida sort of like dropped it onto the floor as well. He stomps him in the face as they roll back into the ring. And then he just locks in this brutal hoverboard lock and then won't let go after the referee rings the bell.
Everyone's a heel.
New Kushida is the best Kushida. Yeah,
very good. Put Austin Theory with Cameron Grimes. Do it. It's just they're brothers, and I love it. Like one's a city mouse and one's a country mouse, but they're both the same obnoxious soul. Put them together immediately. Yeah, all business Kushida is great. It's a lovely kind of new direction for his character. Kushida versus Damian Priest sounds great to me, or even Kushida versus Finn Balor. To be honest, they both sound fine. It really impressive stuff. Like she's brilliant, and it's, you know, we're edging towards no F's given strong style Kushida, and like that's a good place to be.
Yeah, I think he's like that subtle little turn against Velveteen Dream, and that now really leathering people is just completely the right direction for him. He was so not lost. You know, the Marty McFly Kushida has fun with his entrance, is smiling all the time. Like he's a great little package, but this just feels so much more interesting because he's clearly he can just match people on every level. He's got such a versatile arsenal of moves of like being a high flyer and a submissions expert, and also just having that speed that other people can't match. I really do feel that Kushida could be something really special if they keep on this track with him. And I'm hoping it's not just going to be like chuck Kushida straight into a title match against Finn Balor or Damian Priest and have him lose, because I think some real magic could come out of this this turn to the more violent side. And yeah, I don't want to see it cut off too soon.
Empathizing how dangerous Kushida is money. Because like you can put him against anyone and he will have a fighting chance because he's one of the smartest wrestlers alive. Like he can break you down. He could destroy like even the biggest heavyweights because he's such a little savage when it comes to limb work, when it comes to kind of mat strategy and being able to just pop in a submission from out of nowhere. He's amazing. And the more you emphasize that aspect of his character, the bigger a draw he'll be.
Oh. Love it. We then got Candice LeRae cutting a little selfie promo about breaking their freaking TV. Oh, sure. I enjoyed obnoxious Johnny just being really just being a massive pain here and saying, I'm going to buy a new TV right now and send Tegan the bill. And then it's going to be the biggest plasma TV that you've got. It's 120 inches. It's going to be like looking into the sun. Meanwhile, Candice is saying that she's going to win the Women's Battle Royal, and Johnny says, like, won't it be nice when we both have gold around our waist? I really like this version of the Gargano, like, family. I really like the kind of, the sort of Stepford couple of wrestling style thing where they've both got the matching, you know, the his and hers blue and pink tracksuits for the wrestling's family. And yeah, kind of the pettiness of it just being like, you know, it's clearly this blood feud between her and Tegan happening, and there's all the title stuff. And really, it's about like, you broke my TV. I just think, I don't know, there's something in this that I really do enjoy.
I hope they both win next week. I hope they both win and we get that kind of power couple story, like going into, and basically they're just the next few weeks of NXT just about them as a power couple. They don't have to win a takeover. But I want, like, Gargano Balor 2 and Candice EO 2 would be great. Those are two little anchors for a takeover right there.
Yeah, and you've got the added benefit there that, yeah, they do spill out of other stories that have already been told. There's enough history to build on there that I think long-time watchers of NXT will just accept that these matches are happening and that they're important without having to necessarily artificially generate a feud feel in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. We then got the Fashion Police, not Breezango, awesome, as they were announced. The Fashion Police versus Imperium.
Loved this match. So good.
The pacing, this was a match of two halves, right? This was a very slow build to a hot tag. And as soon as the hot tag happened, all hell broke loose. This was just move after move after move after, like, double teams, like four-man combinations, close falls. Like, this was so, so smart. I really liked Imperium's working over Fandango. They worked him over for the first 5 minutes of the match, through a break, and for quite a while after we came back from the break. And it really did feel like that hot tag that Breeze got to come in was just, like, so earned at that point. And it did really put over the idea that he's going to be the freshest man in the fight. I never understand why they immediately always tag back in the partner who's just taken an absolute beating. That never quite makes sense to me. But here, I don't mind too much because it was just absolutely awesome once Breeze got involved in the match. There was this whole bit where Eichner was in a single leg crab and Bartel swung for him. I think it was Fandango, and he sort of got, like, he ducked and then got tumbled out of the ring. And then there was a big dive to the outside and Eichner managed to get up and get into a Death Valley driver. And then he got up onto the turnbuckle and there was a super kick and a cheeky Nando's. And Eichner did the one-arm power bomb, but was fought off. And then Breeze was basically shoved off the top rope at this point, just into Eichner, who caught him in a suplex like it was nothing.
Oh, bloody hell, Eichner was great in this match. They both were. That's the thing, is like Imperium is such a... I mean, Breezango are kind of approaching kind of Young Bucks levels of tag team flair. You know, they're not quite obviously at that level, but, you know, with their kind of their dueling super kicks and their kind of really lovely offense and just being able to kind of be everywhere at once and all this choreography just paying off. And Imperium, we know, are some of the most fluid tag workers going. Like, yeah, all of their kind of, especially towards the end when you just got, like, missed leg drop, penalty kick from Martel into a kind of gut-wrench German suplex. And, like, and just the finish was so well-timed. Like, these guys have got great, great chemistry. Mm-hmm. Not only the tag teams have great chemistry with each other, but these tag teams have great chemistry against each other as well. So, yeah, it's just like, for a group that I don't think anyone really kind of thought, like, oh, well, they're just here to kind of help the younger stars get over. You don't expect Breezango to be a division centerpiece, but if they keep pulling out matches like this, they really could be, as you kind of build up the division around them. The week before, they put on one of the best matches of the night, and that a brilliant six-man tag, no DQ match. Mm-hmm. And then they had match of the night here as well. It's just so great to see Breezango working at this level. It makes me so, so happy. And, like, yeah, not a lot of storyline happening and not a great idea of what the future of the tag division. You probably could argue that it wasn't as good a match as the street fight in AEW, but it's great wrestling. And we watch it on 1.5 speed. I just slowed it down for this one because I just want to watch this match properly. Really, 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 really good. I especially love the finish, if you want to take us through the nuts and bolts of that.
Of course, yeah. So there was this big blind tag on Imperium's side, and they hit a spine buster and a running penalty kick just as that, like, all kicked off. And then they went out for the European bomb with Breeze on Eichner's shoulders. But Fandango jumps into the ring at this point and he drop kicks Eichner into the back, basically pushing him and Breeze towards the turnbuckle. So Breeze, as he gets over there, just shoves Bartel off the top rope and then rolls through with Eichner into a pin and basically steals the match from there with this really close. So I even think that, like, you know, they didn't hit their finish at any point. It still felt close. Like, Imperium still looked amazing, and, like, that, you know, you can still continue this feud probably into TakeOver and have the sort of the final run back of this series with Imperium and, like, put a kind of pin in it and say, like, this is the point now where you know.
Do a 2 out of 3 falls match.
Mm.
Oh, that would be nice.
Because I think it's like Imperium got that option now to just come in next week or the week after and say, like, look, you guys, yeah, sure, you pinned us, but you didn't, you know, we weren't down for the count. You didn't actually beat us properly, did you? You snuck a pin in, and that's fine. Anyone can sneak someone down for 3 seconds, but knocking them out is what you need to do. There's levels here that I think they can play with. And I would, you know, from watching this match, I would love to see them do another match because I do really feel like Breezango are coming into their own as the champs now. Like, you know, they do finally feel like they've really stepped up their game to be the champions. And I wasn't necessarily with them before on that journey, just because I think some of the flip-flopping between comedy and serious doesn't always work. But I actually think here it was kind of perfectly done. They felt like a proper team. Like you said, they feel like a kind of Young Bucks light in that sense of the way in which they kind of construct their offense here. And this was one of those matches where it's kind of almost impossible to keep up because every time someone pops down, as they pop back up, someone else has kicked them in the head and then someone else hits that. Like it was levels of choreography here that were just immense. Really, really awesome stuff. And it was all perfectly behind the referee's back or like just to put over how sort of sneaky but technical Imperium are, because it was always Bartel running in with this penalty kick or whatever it was, just as the referee was looking the wrong way and it was all unexpected. Great, great stuff. This next tag match that happened, I thought was also pretty fun. This was the team of Jesse Kamea and Zaya Lee, who have clearly just been thrown together, versus Team Ninja, i.e. Caden Carter and Casey Catanzaro.
They've had
gear for a little while because
first time I probably noticed it.
So they have been a tag team on house shows for a long time, actually. They've been doing the circuit together for quite a long time, and yeah, they've obviously been used in to further other people's storylines, shall we say, for a while now. In various forms, both separately and together. So it was nice to see them sort of come out here and get a win. Like, you know, it was nice to see them do something with Caden and Casey, because like they are one of the only true tag teams in NXT's women's division, like especially with the Robert Stone brand having folded in the way it has. So Aaliyah's sort of, you know, that the tenuous tag team of Aaliyah and Mercedes Martinez is no more anyway. But yeah, like, and you can tell immediately from seeing them wrestle together as well that they clearly have shared the ring loads of times doing this stuff, because they had some really cool little tag team trickery up their sleeves. That it was a brilliant right at the beginning off the tag. Casey slides to the outside and trips. I'm thinking it's Zaya Lee. It might have been Jesse at this time. Trips her as Caden runs to the other ropes, comes back in with a drop kick, and then Casey is already in position to hit the rolling senton over the top rope. Really cool stuff. There was a tag, and they did like a sort of they did double kicks to the back of the knees and dropped them to the floor. Both hit with the forearm and then with the kick. It was like everything was kind of fluid and working really well together. And I do think, yeah, they were right in saying that like Casey Catanzaro is one of the more interesting pure athletes in the NXT women's division, because she's so just gymnastic, I guess is the only word for it, but like she is so brilliant at just sort of throwing herself around the place and doing like both offensively and in taking bumps. They should have done more with her, I think, when they first got her. And I'm hoping that this leads somewhere with Casey and Caden, maybe building to maybe we'll get a women's tag title defense here on NXT. Like Shayna Baszler, I'd love to see Shayna Baszler come back to NXT for a week, even if it is just to dismantle Caden and Casey.
I thought it was fun. I thought the announcers after the match kind of really put over the pinning combination, which finished the match, which I thought of all the double team moves they did was the worst one. Like, it was just like, did you see that? I've never seen that pinning combination. It's just like, well, there's a crucifix pin combined with like a victory roll, but it's like whatever, a roll up sort of thing. And it was like, it's fine, but it's like as a finishing move, like Caden Carter basically just grabs their opponent and like she gets kicked so that the opponent lands on Caden.
Yeah.
And then she's kind of then, you know, so she got Samoan dropped herself. And then Casey Catanzaro did a roll up over the top of it, which I just like, that to me is a bit too cute. But a lot of the other tag team offense was good. It's just, yeah, I didn't quite rate that. And I only mentioned it because the announced team fawned over that pinning combination so much. And it's just like, nah, it looked a bit crap. But I'm really happy for these guys as a team. I think about Casey, like sort of the same way you think about Shotzi, just like future women's champ right there, mm-hmm. with that perfect underdog story. Like, just, yeah, being able to kind of like gut it out and pick up wins via smarts and, yeah, really unique athleticism. So, yeah, it's really cool to see him pick up a win.
Little post-match angle also happened in which they offered a handshake and Xia Li batted it away, walking out of the ring and leaving Jesse Kamea as well. Probably because they're not friends and they're not a tag team, but know, whatever. See you later, Jesse. Thanks for your 1 week of service. Fine. I wonder what they'll do with Xia Li next. They like her, but they just don't. They sort of refuse to build anything with her. So it'd be interesting to see what they do. She's had a couple of losses now, and she was on a hell of a winning streak in NXT. Maybe this is the start of everybody's heel. So why not Xia Li too? So we then saw Drake Maverick and Killian Dane backstage had a very short chat. Dane said, "I'm not your tag team partner. I'm not coming out to help you for the match." He was speaking the truth. we then got Tegan in her gaming setup, talking to the computer, saying that Candice she knew wouldn't watch a friend be put through a table. She says she's going to win the Battle Royal next week. And then she addresses Io and says, "This time everything will be different." Perfectly fine. A little bit of promo work.
Good chair, mate. Nice chair.
Yeah, it's a wicked chair. Yeah. I hope Tegan doesn't win the Battle Royal because I'm not super excited to see Tegan versus Io again. And I think there are much more interesting options. But I like the, you know, this kind of first collision of Candice and Tegan as characters comes in this Battle Royal. I think that's going to be really interesting and be a really nice little dynamic running, like undercurrent that runs through the match.
I hope they're the final two.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that is kind of like what pushes, where we see some real villainy from Candice. Yeah. Would be nice.
Come on, Candice. Come through. We then got Undisputed Era, Roderick Strong and Bobby Fish versus Killian Dane and Drake Maverick, except it was just against Drake Maverick because Dane does not come out during the entrance and Maverick just comes out and is like, yeah, he's going to come out. And then his little puppy dog face drops when he realizes that...
Forfeit the match, Drake. You don't have to wrestle. It's like, Christ, man. Why do you like being beaten up so much? It's fine. It's babyface. It's like, I've been booked for the match and it would disappoint Mr. Regal if I didn't wrestle, I suppose. It's just like, come on, dude. Why do you like punishment?
Like Drake is like a kid who keeps wanting to stick his hand in the toaster and you have to just be like, no, don't do that. Someone
this time it might be fine.
He needs a minder is what he needs, Drake Maverick. It's irresponsible of NXT at this point to let him keep doing this stuff. Quite frankly, he gets destroyed by the Undisputed Era, as you would imagine. It is the exact booking that you think it's going to be when you think about this match. I thought there was a really cool bit where Drake sort of fires up for a second and he goes for a running bulldog on Bobby Fish coming out the corner, and Fish just sort of scoops him as he goes and then just passes him off to Roderick Strong, who turns it into a backbreaker. Roderick Strong is amazing at putting backbreakers in where you don't expect backbreakers to be.
That's true.
Utterly unbelievable. They would cut to Dane watching the match in Gorilla.
That he was watching. And
enjoying.
He's so great. And the fact that he didn't come out because, like, you know, he felt any obligation to whatsoever. He came out because his boss was giving him hassle about it.
Really, yeah, so William Regal comes out and he says, like, are you just gonna let him be beaten up there, your tag partner, you're just gonna let this happen? He's like, oh, you want me to go out there? And Regal's like, yes. And he's like, fine. And he goes out, and at the point that he comes out, they've chucked Maverick out of the ring and he's sort of sprawled on the ramp lying there, and Dane walks out and it feels like, whoa, the moment of victory, something is, you know, maybe he's going to help Maverick now that he's been told off by his boss. And instead, he just picks Maverick up, puts him back in the ring and says, if you're going to take a beating, take it like a man, and then just begins to walk away.
Yeah, I helped.
And then the Undisputed Era, obviously, can't keep their big mouth shut. And they start calling Dane names and tend to come down. So he gets in the ring. He chucks Roddy around. And then Fish hits him with a chair before it can really escalate, which obviously means that they've won the match. Maverick saves him from a proper chair shot by grabbing the chair and dragging it out of the ring. And then Drake pulls down the ropes as Dane chucks Roddy out. So they've worked as a team for the first time. Look at them, all synchronized and stuff. And Maverick's getting fired up, being like, yeah, we won. We did it. We're a team. We won on the technicality. And he gets so fired up that he shoves Dane. Obviously. The inevitable happens, and Killian Dane punches him in the head. This is great stuff. I love it. Like, yeah, it's like the goofier end of wrestling, but it's the right kind of goofy. Drake Maverick and Killian Dane are the perfect odd couple. They're both completely committed to it. I loved Killian Dane watching it on the screen in Gorilla and having a little laugh to himself. I liked William Regal having to get involved and be like the dad in this scenario. Undisputed Era did their jobs perfectly as well. I just, you know, of course the Undisputed Era would call Killian Dane back into the ring by being too gobby. Like, Robbie everything
wrong as well. Yeah, you fat dork. You guys are jerks.
And it's like, yeah, about it.
No one had to change. No one in any way had to shift their character alignment for this story to work, which is the mark of a well-told story. Like, sometimes NXT can be a little contrived. I think we felt that a little bit with Tegan and Candice. Like, you're just like, this doesn't quite feel like your characters. It feels like you're just kind of being, you've been positioned and having your alignment shifted slightly. No one's alignment shifted here. Everyone acted like the characters they've always been acting as, and it's created a unique, endearing partnership. It's great. It's really good booking. Slow and steady, and you're going to get an endearing tag team out of it.
And you know what? Like, remarkable as well, because look at when the last odd couple pairing tag team that NXT did was the Broserweights, and they just went, that's happening. You know, that just happened. They just chucked them together, and within a month, they were the tag team champions. And then they did sort of like, yeah, they played up the odd couple stuff a little bit. I didn't love it as the Broserweights, but I think here, Killian Dane and Maverick are putting in the work to get this idea of them as a tag team over and making me want to see them work together. Like, they could have, you know, they could have just chucked them together. They could have started it last week, or, you know, this week it could have been a thaw. And there's not even been a remote bit of movement from Killian Dane towards being in a tag team with Drake Maverick. So Maverick is going to have really earned his respect by the time they do become this tag team, which I'm hoping is the thing that happens. But lovely stuff. I love this. Like, this was like the most, I think, front to back, just the perfect bit of booking. Probably the best bit of booking that NXT's done on the show this week. It's just a really well told little story, and it's just really novel and fun.
It's Drake Maverick is so good at drawing sympathy. Like, he's so good at, like, I completely understand why Dane wouldn't want to team with Maverick. He's very small, and it looks like he can't hold his end in a fight. But Drake Maverick just has that never say die, completely earnest. Like, he's a pure babyface. Really difficult to not like him, as I'm sure Killian Dane will discover. You know, that's like, he's just, he won't quit, even though he should, because he keeps getting hurt. But he won't, and it's exactly the right people with exactly the right stuff that we've already seen from them. This feeds brilliantly off the, you know, Drake Maverick versus Legado del Fantasma stuff. He won't quit, and he will earn Killian Dane's respect.
Someone should call his mum and dad and ask him to stop. But someone does need to set him on the right path. It's like, you're not good at this. Tactically, you're not good at this. Right, we then saw Jake Atlas backstage. He was saying that he's come back because Ciampa's lit a fire underneath him, and then Ciampa attacks him from behind and beats him up outside. The interesting wrinkle to this, because I'm not really bothered about seeing Jake Atlas versus Tommaso Ciampa again, is that who should get involved in this little wrinkle? It was Kyle O'Reilly got Oof. Between the two.
Oof.
And had a go at Tommaso Ciampa. Yes, please.
Kyle O'Reilly versus Tommaso Ciampa at TakeOver. Dare we dream? Oh, that would be good. Holy moly.
I like this. I think I'm not sure if I misheard, but I'm pretty sure like at the end, Carl was like, just turned to Jake after sort of staring off Ciampa, because Ciampa was like, fine, I'll see you next week, Jake. And I'll see you as well. Did his little wave and then wandered off. And then Carl sort of turned to Jake and was like, are you okay? And Jake was like, yeah. And he's like, well, get up then. I walked off, like just wandered off. I really want to see singles Kyle O'Reilly now. I am all for it. And you know what?
I don't quite get Howie's face. Like, we were just talking about how like no one's had to kind of change their alignment to make the previous match work. Kyle O'Reilly, I don't quite like. They've done a little bit of legwork with him being frustrated with the Undisputed Era like heel tactics, but I don't quite get where it's come from, considering that he was one of the most obnoxious members of the UE. I would like to hear a little bit from him, and hopefully that's something that we build up to. It's just that he just has. Like, we've just seen him work. The thing is, like, it doesn't matter to us so much, because Kyle O'Reilly is a super worker and we want to see him have long, drawn out, high profile matches with other super workers. Singles run Kyle O'Reilly. Yes, yes, yes. Sign me up for seconds.
So here's a way I think that they might be telling the story of singles run Kyle O'Reilly, because there's a match that's been announced for next week, which sounds quite novel and interesting, and is a new match for WWE NXT.
Novel. It's Aztec Warfare, but a mini version. But Aztec Warfare was also Lucha Underground's greatest match stipulation. So I'm up for it. Let's do it.
So Big Willie Riggs says that five deserving members of the NXT roster are going to be entered into this match. And then we see a bunch of faces flash up on the screen. We get Kyle O'Reilly, Bronson Reed, Velveteen Dream, Bobby Fish, Roderick Strong, Cameron Grimes, Santos Escobar, and Kushida. He says the rules of the match will be two men start. Every 4 minutes, another competitor will enter. The only way to be eliminated is pinfall or submission. Last man standing gets the challenge, Finn Balor, for the NXT Championship at the next TakeOver. What I think is interesting here is that obviously it's five people entering the match and they've shown eight pictures. So I wonder whether they're going to do, and like Velveteen Dream has technically been written off with injury from Kushida's assault. He was on the injury list from coming out of last week's show, I believe. So I don't think he'll be in the match necessarily. And then I wonder whether or not the Undisputed Era are going to come to blows over which one of those three lads is the most deserving to be in that match. That would be kind of an interesting little... This is me just fantasy booking, because likely what will happen is next week they'll just be like, here's the five guys. There was another guy. It was, what's his face? Ridge Holland was in the video as well. So yeah, I wonder if they'll do... if there'll be any sort of back and forth over who's going to be in it, or they're just going to announce it in the coming week of like, these are the five entrants who are deserving. We've decided that now. But I like the sound of the match. It sounds, obviously it is a stripped down Aztec Warfare. I like the fact that they're sort of picking, they're going the opposite way as well from like, they said like four previous champions have just fought for the opportunity to be the NXT champion and they've failed. Three of them have failed. So here are a bunch of people who've never really had the opportunity. So that's also a reason I would say that Velveteen Dream probably shouldn't be in the mix here as well. But like, here's a bunch of people who haven't really had that opportunity and are deserving, who are going to face off for that chance. Yeah, I really like the idea of this match. I think NXT will do a bang up job of doing this. And it feels like a good marquee match for them to have. Like, it feels like something to sort of hang an episode around. We've obviously also got the Women's Battle Royal, which has quite a lot of people in it. And I can't remember all of them off the top of my head. It's Xia Li, Rhea Ripley, Casey Catanzaro, Indy Hartwell, Candice, Tegan, Shotzi.
Yeah. It's everyone. Everyone apart from Chelsea Green and Mercedes Martinez, because they quit Robert Stone. And NXT.
Oh yeah, Lee, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. I think both those matches will be good. They've both got room for lots of storytelling, lots of little mini booking things. I don't know if Gargano's gonna be is he going to be in the match? It seems weird if he's not, but then again, like, maybe they won't put Gargano in the match, because it was like they showed Gargano and Ciampa and Cole like during like one kind of montage, and then they showed all basically the North American title scene in another montage. Yeah. So it's just like, where are you getting these five guys from? And obviously they showed way more than five guys. So it's weird to think like where, you know, who's actually competing.
I think it's going to be that next level down from, I think that the kind of telling was, yeah, that they've said it's, these guys have just had the opportunity. So now it's five more deserving people. And they'll pick from the field of the sort of next, the next level down of NXT stars.
I think we'll see, because we are talking about, this is TakeOver. Like this is, these are the number one contenders for TakeOver. And it's just like, I don't know if necessarily you build a TakeOver on the North American title scene being promoted to NXT champion. I don't know. It could, like Kushida, you know, Kushida versus Finn Balor is, that's a TakeOver match. But I'd assume they'd throw in like one or like maybe, I mean, obviously Ciampa's not in it because he's fighting off Jake Atlas, but I would have thought they'd put Gargano.
Well, he did. Ciampa did say, "I'll see you next week," to Kyle O'Reilly. So maybe Kyle O'Reilly's meant to be in the match, and Ciampa just bullies his way in.
Ooh, look at you, fantasy booking.
I'm on a roll.
You have a go. Yeah, very nice.
Yeah, no, I wonder. I wonder whether that will be. Yeah, I do think, as much as I'd love to see any of these guys take on Finn Balor, I don't think it's something you'd advertise a takeover around necessarily. Not even Kushida versus Finn Balor, because Kushida hasn't been on NXT TV enough recently to be like, here's the main event of our takeover. So yeah, I do wonder if they'll do something more dream matchy in that sense for this first one of Finn's title defenses.
Think Ciampa? But
I don't. It's hard, isn't it? Because if it was Ciampa,
you want the feud with Ciampa, don't you? Like Ciampa's like somewhere you wanted like a proper like 2 months feud of horrible psychological torment. Whereas you've got what, 2 weeks? You got no, after that you've got one takeover. Yeah. No, you got one NXT to build to take over after the match next week. So yeah, if it were me, I'd give it to Gargano.
Yeah, I know. I do think Gargano is probably the smartest choice here, just because you've got an insta feud built basically. You just have to do a video package that goes, do you remember all this stuff between the two of them from a while ago? And then people would be like, oh yeah, you remember it was Johnny that Finn kicked in the head when he turned heel. Like, you know, there's plenty there to build it off of, and that's a really smart way. But people I would love to see from the images they showed is Kushida, Kyle O'Reilly, and Santos Escobar. I would love to see either of those three go up against Finn Balor for the title. That'd be so, so good. Let's talk about the main event quickly. We had Damian Priest versus Timothy Thatcher for the North American Championship. Brilliant match. Yes. Absolutely really well done by both of them.
God, Priest's good. He gets better every week. He's really, really good. And Thatcher's a really good foil for him as well.
Yeah, I love the you know, we were sort of fantasizing last week and saying like, when Thatcher was watching those tapes back of Priest stuff, is Thatcher going to have an answer for everything Priest could do? And it felt here that Thatcher was just sort of on this ruthless path of, every single opportunity I get, I'm going to go for a Fujiwara armbar, and it doesn't matter what else you're doing, because you slip for a second and I'm just going to be like, boom, you're on the mat, I'm going for your arm. And it really, like, they quite subtly sort of sold in this idea that Priest sort of clocked his forearm on Thatcher's head at one point, and he had to get out of the ring and shake it off for a bit. And that just became the target for Thatcher's like oppressive offense of, I'm just going to wear you down until the point that I lock this in fully. And Priest did such a brilliant job of fighting him off. The most impressive thing I thought, and the commentators did put this over as well, was Priest getting out of a Fujiwara armbar that was in the center of the ring just by putting his foot on the rope from the center of the ring.
Yeah, he's a long boy.
He just went, whoop, bump. You can't pin Mr. Tickle.
Jesus Christ. What an image. I really, really, really like the fact that last week, Timothy Thatcher said, look at that springboard cannonball. Look how dumb that is. And then Priest tried to hit it and Thatcher just moved out of the way and then immediately went to kind of lock it in. It's great. That's, yeah, that's NXT booking. Like that. That's really, really good. It makes watching all the mid-match, all the between match segments worth it because they pay off.
Yeah, it was a perfect first events for Damian Priest. It made him look $1 million. Thatcher doesn't lose anything, I don't think, in losing this match. I think Thatcher got across the idea that he is, as Wade Barrett put it, a human torture device, which I just think that's what they should call him from now on. I think it's brilliant. Yeah, he's so good. And I do love the clash of styles here actually worked brilliantly, and they just made a really, really good match. Essentially, Priest manages to hit a Reckoning in the center of the ring and picks up the victory and gets the big sort of the celebration with the full graphics and everything to close out the show. Lovely stuff. I wonder whether he will be champion come the end of TakeOver, though, if he's had such a, like a, he's gone straight into like quite a big big defense first thing to sort of put that over. I feel like if they do that in the sort of 1 week after he's just won the belt, a big event, like you kind of then, it might be that he's only for having a short time with the title, or they're just trying to get like a couple under it. Like maybe he'll win a TakeOver and then lose it at the next one because they're just trying to get a few defenses under his belt before they take it off him.
Who knows? They do loads of title defenses on NXT TV now. That's just part and parcel of them being on USA and up against AEW. Like the amount of title defenses has skyrocketed, which, you know, they didn't need to do it on when NXT was on a post elsewhere. So I don't know if necessarily that is kind of like a booking strategy because they're going to take it off him soon. I just think that is just how NXT programs now. It's more bombast than the NXT of old.
Yeah, overall, like a fun, really like wrestling heavy, brilliant wrestling heavy episode of NXT. They didn't, you know, it feels a little bit like it is building to next week as ever, in the sense that like next week is the really big match. Next week is the women's battle royal, and it's the gauntlet match as well next week, the gauntlet eliminator or whatever it's called. That's all going to be really, really exciting. And then, you know, after that, we've got a week and then there's a takeover. So
I really want them to call it Aztec War Games. I'm really looking forward to next week. I like watching NXT, man. It depresses me slightly to hear people like Chris Jericho say it's embarrassing for NXT because they put on really quality content. If you watch this on a Tuesday night, just like a night of good wrestling, you'd be like, no complaints.
Exactly.
It's not the most bombastic episode we've ever seen. It was difficult to come up with a topic to talk about. You know, that's why we talked about Chris Jericho so much. But it's still, it's good. It's really, really functional, good wrestling. And a pleasure to watch it every week.
Absolutely. I'm very excited for next week. I think next week will do wonders for NXT. I'm kind of with Chris Jericho and I want them to move to Tuesday. So do that, NXT.
Do you like quizzes? Do you like wrestling? Do you like watching self-professed experts in their fields being exposed as dangerous frauds? Then you'll love Quizzlemania, brought to you by Parts Funknown, the team behind acclaimed wrestling RPG No Rolls Barred. Join us every week as four wrestling pundits pit their knowledge against each other in a cerebral wrangle for prizes, glory, and a bit of good old-fashioned escapism. Enjoy the videos live every Wednesday on Parts Funknown's YouTube channel, or subscribe right now to have them beam straight to your mobile device. Quizzlemania, it's the showcase of the Immorons.
What's your favourite board game, Laurie?
What's my favourite board game? I'm more of a card game guy, really, I think. Ultimate. Well, then Smash Up is my favorite.
That makes sense.
Board game. Yeah, I really love
modular board, like those little kind of cards that you put stuff on.
So I love that. I really love Keyforge as well, which is a collectible card game, but you collect the decks instead of collecting the cards separately. So you don't build decks; you just buy decks, and that's a really fascinating little game because sometimes everything you can just get grotesque decks, obviously, that just destroy other things because you can't counter build. So you just have to sort of go like, this is the best one that I've played with so far. But it just involves playing with lots of different styles of things. And I really enjoy that about Smash Up 2 in the sense that, like, yeah, there are really OP strategies of, I could pick those things, but it's funnier to pick two things that sound weird together and you have to make work. Mm. And obviously that leads to some circumstances where you are really frustrated at the game, sitting there going, I can't do anything. These two things literally don't work together. But if you get like a tiny bit of synergy and you begin to work it out, it's just a very satisfying game because it makes you feel clever when you're not.
Asymmetric games, that's the kind of the official term for it, which is where you have like variable player powers and it's finding out, yeah, there's different, the kind of the weird alchemy you get when you put two kind of new move sets together. Mm. And like you say, yeah, working out sort of the cheat, just like, oh, actually kind of the, you know, this kind of, if you employ this strategy against these people. For that reason, I think Cosmic Encounter is my favorite game. Mm-hmm. Because it's basically a really good kind of like, it's like a little bit like Risk, you're kind of fighting each other. There's a lot of kind of war and alliances and stuff like that. But every single alien race that you can play as, and you get 50 alien races, every single one breaks the rules of the game in one huge way. And so when you put a bunch, like four or five of those alien races together, then suddenly you've got this kind of like puzzle, which you then have to solve. Like, how can I be the one single race that comes out ahead when I've got to compete with you breaking rules this way, you breaking them, blah, 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 blah. And so if you like Smash Up, Cosmic is like... for a game, it was made in 1970s, and it's still around, which goes to show just how bloody enduring that game is. And also, I think you'd really like Unmatched as well. Mm-hmm. Really, because basically that is similar to Smash Up in that, like, every character has a deck of cards, and every deck of cards is weighted in a specific way with, like, you know, some people are really fast but you know, not so good at attacking. Some people are slow but brutes, but everyone has like this really cool little superpower that they can do. And again, it's just like putting two decks against each other and trying to use deduction almost to kind of figure out what is the winning strategy here, what's the game, how can I turn your strengths into my strengths and turn, you know, my strengths into your weaknesses. Really, really good.
I do love a bit of deduction. I also like social deduction games, but I've realized that I'm not well trusted amongst a man named El Fakador, the most trustworthy person at WrestleTalk. I am not well trusted when it comes to social deduction games. People just think I'm lying all the time, which is quite annoying. Quite annoying when you play werewolf and things like that, and you're trying to, like, you know, and you obviously arguing that you are what you say you are, and you know exactly who the werewolves are, and yet you're not believed. We literally played a game of the Thing board game.
That's really good, that game.
And there was a point where I had worked out that the host of the game, the guy who owned the game, was the Thing, and I had a flamethrower. And I had to make the very difficult decision of whether or not, because he had owned the game for 2 years at this point and never once played it because he'd never had the sort of situation where there were enough people sat around to play it. We were 20 minutes into the game. I had deduced that he was the Thing. The flamethrower takes the Thing out of the game. You can just use it, one-shot them, they can't play anymore. And I went, he's waited 2 years to play this game. I can't, even though I know for a fact that he is the Thing, I cannot just flamethrower him and remove him from his own game he's waited 2 years to play. So I left him in, and then I got shot trying to get into the helicopter because the other guy refused to believe, even though I had basically by that point so much proof and evidence that this other guy was the Thing, because every mission he'd been on had failed. And I'd literally moved it, like, chosen everyone in like different formations to be like, if this is just my process of elimination, this just means he's the Thing. And I still was shocked getting onto the helicopter. I was like, bro, okay, good.
I similarly have a resting guilty face. And annoyingly, because I own a lot of board games and because I play a lot of board games, I can't argue my way out of it, because everyone's just like, well, of course you do. You own the game. Like, you know exactly all the kind of strategies to kind of, you're so untrustworthy. I was like, I'm trying to help everybody. Yeah. Please, I want to win. But I've just, there's something about either my voice or my face, which makes me the kind of the least trustworthy in board games. I always get like hanged first in Werewolf. And to the point where it's almost like a running joke with my friends now. They kill me off because I'm always the traitor. It's so annoying.
Well, this is what happened when we did the office-wide game of diplomacy, and everyone was just like, no one trusted me.
Don't get me started, Laurie. Like,
and literally all I did was tell people exactly what I was doing. That's all I did. That's all that everyone was like, you can't trust him. He's lying. And I was like, I'm going there. I was messaging Rich being like, I'm going to leave your stuff alone if you don't move on my stuff, but I'm going to go into this exact country. And that every single time I did that.
You know who's a little sneak? Little Pete. Little Chopper Pete. Yeah.
Quietly mustering power in the north.
Yeah. No wonder he turned on Luke. Can't be trusted. Right. Well, we could talk about board games forever. And, well, maybe we will over the course
shall,
of 3 years.
So, if you weren't listening earlier when we discussed it, but head on over to Phenomenerds. There'll be a link in the description on your podcast feed as well. And subscribe to the channel because we're going to start putting content out in the first week of October. The whole idea is it will be, I guess it's scalable in the sense like it's mostly going to be about getting you into board games because there's obviously a lot of channels out there that talk about board games on a very technical level. There's a lot of information to know, I think, before you can get into them at that kind of level. That's why I've seen a lot of people just pick up Kaplunk when they go into drafts, the most annoying game to have at a cafe that also offers D&D, but whatever. yeah, so like this is a good way to, like the tagline says, get you on board, because hopefully the idea will be that it will offer you insight into the most popular sort of forms of gaming, what they're about, what are the sort of biggest games in those fields, and what are the games that people who play board games really respect. So therefore, those are the ones that you should play to seem cool amongst your board game friends, which sounds like an oxymoron, but it can exist. Also, if you like podcasts, which I'm assuming you do because you're listening to this one, we've got loads more coming your way because we've got the magazine show. The AEW one will be out. We've got SmackDown on Saturday. And then we're going to kick back in next week with Raw, but we're also building up to Clash of Champions, and there'll be extra content out around that as well. So thank you very much for listening. See you later. Goodbye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.